No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special one-time-only World Tag League edition of the Super J-Cast. I am your other British man, not the British man you were probably expecting, but one trying to fill in the shoes. I'm Mikey CC. I'm a friend of the podcast. I'm an avid New Japan fan and someone who is an avid fan of World Tag League specifically, and that's why I'm here to talk to you. And today, to join me in this lovely little chat about the best tournament all year round is my friend
John Bivens. I am not the typical American typical American that you were probably expecting to hear, but here we are. It's World Tag League season. So nice we had to talk about it twice.
Oh, that was such natural audio. The audio you get when you try and repeat something we just recorded an hour ago but forgot to record. So, spoilers, this is not the first time we've recorded this. This is take two. The Discord didn't quite record, but it's fine. It just means you're getting even more seasoned and like matured opinions on World Tag League. We've got such great things to say, and it's going to be fantastic. So, John, I'll start off by just asking you, as I did an hour and a half ago, when do you get into New Japan? What's your relationship with wrestling? And yeah, just a bit about yourself to start off.
Yeah, and for anyone that doesn't like this podcast, the first one was so awesome. So
it was great.
Just use your imagination and like fill in the blanks, and like the best points that we make in this one, just pretend that we made them even better and more long form before. But yeah, so I am a professional wrestler in the Southeast. I started training about 6 years ago, been wrestling about 5 years, all throughout Georgia and Tennessee. I started watching New Japan probably around 2015, 2016 or so. I got into wrestling when I was about 9 years old with my dad. We went to some local shows in the area, and I just kind of fell in love with it from there. And around 2016 or so, I discovered internet piracy and discovered New Japan Pro Wrestling. So I've been following since like the 2016 G1. Been a longtime fan of World Tag League.
Mm-hmm. For me, quite similar in terms of time period. I started around 2017. I was a secondary wrestling fan at that point. I was a WWE guy when I was growing up in school. I remember I bought the pay-per-view for WrestleMania 27 when The Miz won the main event. That's how great my childhood was. So I was a WWE fan, but I was kind of out of it at that point in time. But I remember seeing on Facebook a gif of two Japanese men who would be Tetsuya Naito and Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi German suplexing Naito off the second rope into the ring from the G127, I believe. And then from that, I used as many illegal means as I could to watch most of that G1, obviously, in particular, the Kenny Omega Naito final and the Naito Tanahashi block final. I just thought some of like the best wrestling I've ever seen. I was so blown away. And from that point, I did get New Japan World, and I was kind of just all in from there. So from my point of view, New Japan's kind of the pinpoint of my wrestling fandom. I've watched some Stardom, I've watched some Noah, obviously watched some AEW, but New Japan's really what I, my bread and butter. And that comes with pros and cons because, you know, it's a funky time. There's been good times and bad times this year, but World Tag League, generally, it feels like a pretty good tournament in general, and we'll discuss that today. Firstly, though, I do have a listener question. This is from a random listener who is also the host of the podcast, usually called Joel, who says, "Hi guys, first time, long time. Please talk about the North London Good Derby and talk about it enough to alienate the casual listener." So I will try to do that for you, Joel. Do not worry. Yes, Arsenal are a football team in London. Soccer, if you prefer, for Americans out there. Arsenal are 6 points clear in the Premier League. They beat their derby rivals, the London, North London derby, Tottenham Hotspur, 7-1 at home. Their new signing, Eberechi Eze, scoring a hat-trick, the first hat-trick in the North London derby since 1978, in what was an exceptional performance. And with Liverpool and Man City being absolutely rubbish, they're surely going to run away with the Premier League. So, Joel, I hope that was good enough for you. One more follow-up question from me. My Twitter account asks, could you please discuss the rise of Frank Lampard's Coventry City? I'll keep this brief, but I support Coventry City. We're 10 points clear at the top of the league, and it's going very well, and I would like that to continue. So, mild tangent there. Hopefully we got all that sorted there. You watch any sports, John?
Not specifically. I will follow up to something that we talked about in the first podcast. We were talking about sports betting, and you were telling me to bet on an Arsenal draw tonight. And I said yes. I was going to DM you and ask for like specific player stats and like the over-unders on those. So like if I'm trying to make bank so I can afford Christmas presents this year, what am I betting the farm on?
All right, so I'm just going to think the Arsenal game tonight. This is good, actually. Gambling, you know, do it responsibly, everyone out there, but
or don't.
It's quite fun. Okay. Or don't, you know, do you. We'll do that. For tonight, I would put, if you say, let's put a pound coin or a dollar, if you will, let's put a pound on Arsenal buying to draw because it's a group game in the Champions League. Neither of them need a win. They both have big games on Saturday at the weekend, so they're probably going to rest players. It'll be a big statement if Arsenal won, but Arsenal have a really bad record against Bayern Munich, which they don't like talking about, but they lost 10-2 on aggregate about 8 or 9 years ago, which was very funny as someone who's not an Arsenal fan, sorry to say. But they have a really bad record against Bayern, but obviously are playing really well at the moment. So I think they'll get a draw. Harry Kane, who's Bayern Munich's striker, used to play for Tottenham, so Arsenal's rivals. He's the best striker in Europe. He'll score. I think Arsenal will have more possession. I think Eze will probably score since he's Arsenal's best player at the moment. So, yeah. Couple things you could go with there. Broadly with betting, though, football's all over the place. I mean, Liverpool lose every week at this point, and they're the most expensive team in England. So try it. There's bankers, but it's also quite hard to predict what will happen sometimes. So, you know, try and, you know, pace yourself and go for the games that seem a bit more obvious. Don't get in the nitty gritty because it can be quite harmful. Lovely. So that's the football bit done. It was just as good the second time. I hope everyone enjoyed that. So, second listener question. Our other question for today from Velche Braha, who's a friend of mine. He asks, could you please compare this year's Tag League to previous ones for me? So I'm someone who's watched every Tag League since 2018. When did you start watching World Tag League? When was your first one?
I want to say 2017, 2018, somewhere around in there.
Yeah, probably similar. So I think we both kind of agree on this point that they do blend together quite often, where you can remember sometimes teams and sometimes matches, but it's hard to think of like a tag league that stands above the rest. I think as a rule of thumb, the best one was 2019 because it was Dangerous Techers, Bishamon, Sanada Naito, I think were a team. There was some good heavy hitters. I remember Minoru Suzuki and Lance Archer had a really good match with Zack and Taichi. Which one do you think was your like standout in the past?
I forget the year, but it was the one with Michael Elgin and Jeff Cobb. And I think Chuck Taylor and Trent Barretta were in that one too. I'm just nostalgic for like that time frame of like late 2010s New Japan Tag Leagues where you just get like weird mashup teams or that weren't like normally part of tours and things like that. So I think the one where Elgin and Cobb were in there was my favorite.
Wasn't there like I didn't go to a team with a Young Lion one year that World Tag League is quite random sometimes, but the broader point is I think we're both in agreement that on paper, just based on the lineups coming in, and also obviously the first four shows we're going to discuss, we've had one near match of the year contender we'll discuss a bit later. I think this has the potential to be the best World Tag League there's been, at the very least since I started watching wrestling in New Japan, so the past 10 to 15 years. Would you broadly agree with that?
I would say at least the last 5 years, like the vibes post COVID, this I think is the best overall feeling I've had about a tag league in the last 5 years.
Yeah, no, it just feels very much that the companies just went all out for some reason. And yeah, it's been really exciting. So we're going to go through show by show. Obviously, we're going to do nights 1 through 4. We're recording the same day as night 5. It ended a while ago now because this is our second recording. But we're going to ignore that because neither of us have watched it fully. And also, there isn't a huge amount to say about A Block night 3. So, first point very quickly before we get on to the World Tag League. There was a little bit of news today from Fightful where Sean Rossat was discussing the fact that there were a couple AEW wrestlers who declined working the G1 this year. Due to the fact that they felt New Japan had, in previous attempts, snubbed them and not heard back. So that New Japan told them they'd be booked for something, and then they never did. Just so people are aware, this obviously, that's quite interesting. Obviously, New Japan, we tried to give AEW a lot of stick for how the relationship's been, but New Japan does also have to hold some accountability for how poorly they sometimes run areas of business. I think this is a good example of that. Would you agree broadly?
Yeah, broadly, yeah. I think it's a case of worst person you know makes a good point in a Sean Ross Sapp. Mm-hmm. So yeah. State-sponsored media actually tells the truth.
Yeah. And then throwing in from there, if you want to know which wrestlers in particular did decline work in the G1 this year and a little bit of gossip, join the Super J Cast Discord because I heard that months ago from there. So join us there. Have a lovely chat. Ask Joel. Get in the JCast DMs, etc. So we'll start. So we're going to start essentially on the Corican Hall show from November 20th. We're going to go match by match. We're going to alternate who's speaking when. And we'll just, again, share our thoughts on the matches and update the standings as we go and do some talking points as we do. So I'll go through the undercard very quickly. Opening match. Kanemaru, Sanada, and Narita beat Zane J, Alex Zane, and Lance Archer. Kanemaru won with a Boston Crab over Zane J. Oyewa pinned Jacob Austin Young in the second match, TMDK versus Empire. Third match, Umino pinned Murashima, who was teaming with El Fantasma and Tanahashi. Umino was with Yuya and Shoma. And fourth match, David Finlay, Hiromu, and Gedo. Finlay pinned Daiki Nagai, who was with Oscar and Yuto. So broadly, some previews. Anything in general from all the undercard tags on these shows that you've wanted to point out? Because I don't really want to spend too much time on them, but obviously there are bits that are quite interesting.
The only thing that really stuck out at all was the Yuto Ice and Hiromu exchanges in their tag match. Afterwards, there was like a big pull-apart brawl, and I always love when New Japan does that. It just feels like a really simple, straightforward angle of like how to build intensity and interest in the next match, which is pretty much, you know, the point of preview tags. But I feel like that gets kind of lost with people going through the motions. But the brawl afterwards really set the table for the block match the next night.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And we'll discuss those matches in a little bit, because night two was slightly more interested in night one, but we'll go through night one right now. First match, A block opening match. We had Yano and Oleg defeating the team of El Desperado and Shuji Ishikawa. Shuji Ishikawa's New Japan debut. Yano pins Ishikawa in 9 minutes 56 with a low blow roll up. So this was not quite the prototypical Yano match, because we've discussed before, Yano has kind of a very, he's had a lot of world tag leagues, and he has a way his matches usually go, where they're quite interference heavy, they're quite getting the crowd jigged up. Often his tag partner will just kind of be there and kind of follow on from him. But Yano, a bit of aggression here, a couple little heelish things, that were a bit more heelish than usual. Oleg and Ishikawa really got into it. There was some really good sequences there. You could tell Oleg had like a level of respect for him and was quite excited to wrestle him. There was a good energy there. He had some good interchanges, some good chops as well. Despy, he's looking a bit banged up. He's had his t-shirt on. He had his tape all over his neck area, so he looks like he's struggling a little bit. So hopefully he doesn't have to carry too much of the weight for the tag team this tournament. The finish was all right. I thought the finish was fun, where Oleg threw Despy at Ishikawa as Despy was in the ring with Yano, and then Yano kind of rolled up both of them. He kind of piled them on top of each other, and they like quickly rolled them both up. Wow, they were distracted and shocked, so they got the win there. Okay opener. Good showcase for Ishikawa, but besides that, not a huge amount to say. Would you agree?
I agree. I think if there was ever a tour that Despy was going to work hurt, it's good that it's tag league. Because mm-hmm. Ishikawa, getting to see him in there with the New Japan guys is kind of the hook of that tag team. So for Despy to kind of lay out and take a little bit of time off, like, it gives you more time to see Ishikawa do spots with people you want to see him do spots with. So I think it works to the team's benefit a little bit that Despy's kind of taking a backseat in this.
100%. And we'll move on to the second match. A block, we had House of Torture Derby, the House of Torture Derby, the big derby of the weekend. We had Farley and Evil defeating Chase Owens and Yujiro in 7 minutes 10. Evil submitted Yujiro with the Darkness Scorpion. Talk us through this one. Talk us through House of Torture's little family feud.
So it basically played off of the previous night's House of Torture produce show. As we'll get into a little bit later on as well, there's still more sort of teases of the Yujiro babyface turn, which by night three or four, I feel like has kind of died off because his reactions were dead on that night. But he was still kind of over as a baby face because the angle that they did, you know, the night before with Evil coming out to challenge him for the singles match because he couldn't beat Saya Kamatani, which I think is a great angle, that Evil was angry that he couldn't beat a woman, as he said. So I think that's the appropriate level of misogyny that I want in my New Japan Pro Wrestling. But yeah, short heat on Chase Owens. There was one spot where Owens and Fale were on the outside of the ring, and it looked like Fale forgot that they were both illegal men, because they rolled in like right at 19. But it wasn't like, oh, we're teasing the count out. Like, Fale was just moving extremely slowly. Like, there was no urgency in it. So it looked like he forgot what was going on for a second. So I did pop for that. I also popped for the finish. I liked where they were all taking shots of whiskey there. And, you know, of course, Evil keeps the whiskey in his mouth and sprays it in the eyes and gets the pin on Owens. But Dick Togo kind of consoling Kanemaru and just kind of shooing him out of the ring while the dastardly cheating is going on behind his back was good comedy. I also really liked Owens' selling of the finish at the end as well, where like Evil's trying to make amends and Owens is like, oh, it was an accident. So it's like he was kind of, it was one of those things he knew he was being bullshitted, but he wasn't fully going along with it. But he's like, it's not the time or the place to pick this fight. So I think there's some interesting tea leaves being dropped for the future of House of Torture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt like a nice little mini sequel to the night before. I've seen like the main event of that show. I've seen it. And obviously you've seen all the clips on Twitter about the Evil promo, etc. So obviously everyone was really excited to see how they're going to play that off. And I'm happy they actually did something with it. I'm happy there was kind of like a bit of resentment there from Yujiro to Evil. And obviously Evil still gets the win, so that might carry on later. It does feel a bit like they're using the last bit of Yujiro juice and the rest of this tournament. He's just going to be typical Yujiro, which is kind of what I expect to happen. But for this match itself, it was quite nice. And Chase Owens, yeah, enjoyed him getting spit with whiskey because it was a funny spot and they played it really well. So, third match, seventh match, we had Bishamon and Taichi and Kojima. Kojima-gun back again, once again. And we had Taichi pinning Yoshihashi in 12 minutes 30. A little bit of an upset there. I would say not a great match. It was okay. It was good. It was just kind of serviceable. The majority of the story was built around Taichi's injured leg. So his knee was hurt and kind of this teasing of, will Kojima help him? Will Kojima like be on the same side? Because obviously it's quite low key, but there was a big faction breakup many years ago. And these two teams with each other should be a pretty big deal. And it kind of isn't. So at least there's some teases there. Obviously, Ishii is injured thanks to Tony Khan. So we don't have him. So we get this team instead. The Bishamon gear looks great. I really like the all-white look. Yoshihashi is a very good wrestler. So the closing sequence when it was Yoshi and Taichi was really strong. They kind of, Bishamon were setting up all their usual finisher. But Kojima gets in, works with Taichi. They do a combo lariat into Black Mephisto, get the win. Maybe this will lead to something down the line with Taichi and Kojima, like long term, or maybe it's just a tag league, middle of the block team that aren't going to do much. But it's a big win for them for the time being. You expect Bishamon to rack up some points, but still a pretty big win, all things considered.
Yeah, one of my only notes is that Kojima, he was celebrating a lot after the match, but Kojima's starting to kind of show his age a little bit, which like is not really newsworthy, but is interesting considering he was sort of the last bastion of the old guard that never really showed any signs of aging. Like you put him next to Tenzan and it's like the man still looks like $1 million. But in this match, he was definitely the slowest person in the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Bishamon, they'll probably end up winning the block, I just expect. But a slow start for them probably makes it more interesting for everyone else. Main event, we had the new team of Gabe Kidd and Yota Tsuji, the unaffiliated War Dogs team up, continuing here against Driller Maloney and Shingo Takagi. So two cross-faction teams. We had Shingo pinning Gay Kid in 17 minutes with the War Dragons. Pretty solid main event, would you say? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. The crowd brawling at the beginning didn't do much for me. Pretty, like, standard fare. But then it just broke down into, like, a big schmoz with a lot of big moves, spears, you know, teases of the Drilla Killa, things like that. I really liked the Drilla and Shingo, like, combo finisher, the double Last of the Dragons. I think it's a good move for them. Yeah, they were sort of establishing chemistry. And then as the tour's gone on, you've seen like a little bit of progression there where it seems like they're just solidified and like they are together as a team now. Drilla and Gabe were hitting each other really hard, which, I mean, Tsuji and Shingo were too, because, you know, it knocked out Tsuji's voice for a couple days. I still don't know if that's better. But yeah, it looks like Gabe and Drilla were having a lot of fun working with each other. Because, you know, they were supposed to have the match this year in G1 together, and that didn't happen because of Gabe's auspicious injury that may, yeah, whatever played out there, that he was somehow still fine to work the cage match or whatever at the AEW pay-per-view.
The AEW contract-specific injury, that one.
Yeah, that one. They were excited to work together, so yeah, fun, solid match that kind of established Shingo and Drilla going forward as a serious tag team.
Mm-hmm. And as much as I thought Drilla didn't have a bad G1, I do think as a wrestler, his strengths really do show when he's in the tag team. Not saying he's not a good singles wrestler, but when he's got someone else there who can kind of carry kind of the nitty gritty bits of a match, kind of like get the flow, and he's kind of allowed to kind of just look cool and like hit hard and get the crowd up. I do think that's what's best for him, because the team with him and Clark was really good. And I don't think that he's quite recaptured that since going heavyweight personally.
Yeah. I thought he had a solid G1, but yeah, I do agree that he works really well as a tag team guy, but I think he's a little bit of an underrated MVP for New Japan this year. I know a lot of people just had zero expectations for him once he moved up to heavyweight, but I think he's exceeded the expectations despite the fact they were very low to begin with.
Yeah, I think he's really working hard. Like, the Sanada King of Pro Wrestling match should have just been like meaningless undercard, but he like bladed, he lost like 5 gallons of blood. It was obscene. And he's really working hard, and I think he's getting rewarded for it. He's getting a decent spot in a lot of shows. I expect him to get some sort of maybe TV title or never title run maybe next year. That'd be a nice step up. But happy with Drilla, happy with this tag team. Good first show. Obviously, A block, I'm slightly less excited for than B block, but it was broadly good. We'll now jump over to B block night one in the Fujisawa City Gymnasium. Attendance 1,542. Opening match, we had Kanemaru pinning Matsumoto. In the second match, we had Bolton Oleg pinning Yasuda. In the third match, we had Driller Maloney again getting the pin over Sho Mikoto, previewing the match between War Dragons and Despy Nishikawa the following night. And then match four, we had Gabe pinning Dick Togo again, previewing the upcoming tag. So, first match on this show, we have Alex Zane and Lance Archer defeating the team of Sanada and Ren Narita in 9 minutes 6 seconds with the blackout source. So, do you want to talk us through this one?
Yeah, not too much to say. I think it was pretty solid, you know, tag league fare for the most part until the finish. The one thing that bugged me throughout the course of the match was sort of the inconsistency with the way that House of Torture was cheating. Because it's like it was in front of the ref at points, and then at other times they distract the ref. And I feel like when you're doing something like that, you need to be consistent with it, where it's like, all right, we're either going to cheat blatantly the whole time and we're just irrepentant assholes, or we're trying to be sneaky about it and it's behind the ref's back every time. Because I think when you split the difference and go 50-50 with it, it makes it kind of world breaky. Or it's like, you know, what's allowed, what's not allowed. Like, why is doing this behind the ref's back better than just doing it in front of the ref if we can get away with all this other stuff. So I wasn't a fan of that. The other thing was Archer got hit with three different low blows in the match, and they still ended up winning. And afterwards, he wasn't selling it at all, which I thought was a choice.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss Archer and Zayn when they have their next match, because I think that one has a bit more juice to it. But I do broadly like Monster Source. I think it's a good, serviceable tag team that the crowd gets into, and they're like pretty likable baby faces. And yeah, this was solid. Naruto and Sanada, I didn't expect much from at first, but we'll discuss with their next match. They do seem to have at least some inkling of intrigue involved in that tag team. So, sixth match, we have Zack Sabre Jr. and Oiwa defeating the team of Great Okan and Callum Newman. Team DK beating Empire in 13 minutes, 3 seconds. Zack pinned Great Okan. I thought this was really good, actually. I thought this was the sleeper, like, possibly match of the night for me. I was really impressed with the Zack and Great Okan finishing sequence and also their interactions throughout. Great Okan gets a bad rap overall for being, like, maybe a lazy worker. And he definitely is some of the time, but when he's working Zack, the G1 match was fantastic. They had a really good rapport here. Again, not quite as built around the claw this time, but kind of just trading pins and, like, grappling, because Okan's a really good grappler. And obviously, Zack gets the win eventually with a little help from Oiwa. He looks built. He looks like he's put on mass, but he looks really muscular. And he just looks more confident now. He looks like, after the G1, he's really settled into his role. And this, and as of last year, Oiwa and Zack, they're just a great tag team. And Callum Newman, you wanted to talk about Callum Newman, didn't you? Certainly, he's definitely looking more imposing at this point.
Yeah, to me, it's almost scary watching Callum wrestle at this point, because the only difference between him and Lance Archer is maybe 30 pounds and like 2 inches. He is really big now, and all of his offense is based on him running fast and flying all over the place. So it just makes me cringe watching him like pivot on like such short steps, just for his ankles and his knees and all of that. I worry that him trying to keep up this pace with that added weight is going to come back to bite him in the form of, you know, a broken ankle or a torn ligament or something. But I mean, he's awesome. He's a lot of fun to watch. I feel like the Ospreay comparisons are out the window in a lot of ways. Like, he's bigger now than Ospreay, like, physically wise. So, yeah, I mean, I like him. I just worry about him long term with the way that he's working now and all that he's trying to do.
Yeah, I do think Callum's due a pretty major singles run next year. I think the Empire breakup teasers are quite obvious. I do think it will happen at some point, possibly end of this tournament. Again, it does feel like there's a lot of storylines going on at the moment, and Callum's kind of in the background, but I do think it's quite noticeable how he's wrestling since the G1. He's very bullying, like brash and rude and snarky. He had that little pull apart with Yuto a couple weeks ago. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops throughout the tournament, and possibly if Empire's even a thing come next year, because, well, Hanare's still injured, and only these two are really like established members at that point, at this point, who are around regularly, with Akira not as consistent at the moment. Seventh match will go El Fantasma and Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Yuya Nomura and Shota Umino. Shota got the pin over his former best friend ELP in 17 minutes 20 with the second chapter. Can you talk us through this one? Obviously, I've got a bit to say about the post-match, but the match in general.
There was a decent amount of crowd heat for it. They did double heat on Tanahashi and Fantasmo, double hot tags. There was a couple spots early on where Uemura got a little bit lost, but they got things back together, and I think Fantasmo worked really hard. It's one of those things where commentary mentioned in one of the later nights that Phantasmo was supposed to team with Tanahashi last year, but with his cancer diagnosis, he wasn't able to be on the tour. So it's a feel-good tag team to see Tanahashi and Phantasmo, at least for me. I know Phantasmo's not beloved by the hardcore New Japan fans, but I think he's really solid when he's not relied on to do character work. I think when he's just wrestling and doing dives, I think he's still a really solid mid-carder. And he's definitely motivated working with Tanahashi. So, and Tanahashi is still very motivated as well. It's amazing to see like the performances that he's putting out this late in the year after having like the most active year of his career in, you know, 20 years or whatever it is. So yeah, it was just a really solid match. And then, like you said, the post-match was a rather interesting angle as well.
So I just took note of the post-match because obviously Tanahashi's last show in this stadium, it's the last show in this arena. They're doing like all of this kind of sentimental like farewell. So ELP, Shota and Tanahashi all bow in the center of the ring towards each other, and obviously gets a nice reaction from the crowd. And then Tanahashi just rips around the lapped around the ring afterwards, touching towels and like waving to the fans, etc. But Yuya is like noticeably distant. He doesn't involve himself with the bowing. He seems a bit aloof. He seems a bit separate, and it's a bit odd because obviously they're all baby faces in Hontai. And it just makes me think back to a story that dropped earlier this year that perhaps some of the higher-ups in the company didn't have enough faith in Yuya, that he didn't speak up or not. He wasn't maybe showing enough personality. And possibly that is a bit of a rift between him and Tanahashi, who is the CEO. He's quite influential, obviously, and will be even after he's retired. So, interesting. I mean, it just felt slightly odd. I hope maybe it'll have a storyline payoff at some point, but a noticeable moment there. Obviously, Tanahashi beat Yuya at Dominion, which was strange at the time, but he got his win back in the G1. But yeah, a bit odd for me.
Yeah. Very uncharacteristic, because you'd think if anyone was going to be sort of objecting to the whole situation, it would be more Umino. You know, you would picture Tanahashi kind of wanting to give the keys to Uemura and Umino taking offense to it, since he's the one that's been shouting the loudest about wanting to be the leader of the new generation. So, yeah, interesting. I don't know. Like we've talked about before, like this year's World Tag League is more interesting because it feels like stuff is happening. Even in the undercards, it feels like there's little nuggets of things going on. Whether it be, you know, Yano working a little bit more heelish or Yujiro getting a little bit of a babyface rub, it feels like it's not just matches for the sake of matches. It feels like there is some small stories being developed throughout the tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And again, we get 8 more Tanahashi tag matches before we're pretty much at the end. So you do have to savor it, even if not every match is going to be a classic, but I thought this was largely okay. It was just, it was fine. It just, the post-match was more interesting to me than the match. Main event, night two, we had the team of Hiromu and David Finlay, again, War Dogs, unaffiliated team up, beating the IWGP Tag Team Champions of Oscar Loeb and Yuto Ice, the Knockout Brothers, in 16:18. With Finlay getting the sneaky roll-up on Yuto Ice. So the finish was, obviously, Hiromu and Finley's whole bit as a tag team is they don't like each other, and Finlay will often just use Hiromu as a weapon, like a battering ram, who will like overhead throw him onto other opponents and use him as a weapon and not care for his well-being. The finish was Hiromu's in the ring with Yuto. Finlay tags in without him knowing, and while Yuto gets the cover on Hiromu, seemingly winning it, Finlay sneaks in, gets a quick roll-up, looks incredibly smart as the faction leader over his younger, obviously Yuto has just joined. So yeah, I just asked you quickly, how do you feel about the Finlay Hiromu tag team, and also David Finlay in general this year? Because he's in ring been one of the best wrestlers of the company, and his booking hasn't necessarily reflected that, I'd say.
Yeah, the Hiromu and Finlay tag team, I think as the tour's gone on, their shtick has worn just a little bit thin to me. just in the way that in the undercards and the tag matches, like using Hiromu as a weapon, like it's fun the first couple times you see it, but I feel like they need to kind of shake that up a little bit and not play that the same way that they have been. But they've got great chemistry together, great comedic timing. After the match, Finley did the post-match promo where he was interviewing Hiromu, who was laying prone dead on the mat. And I mean, the crowd was popping for Finley asking him questions and Hiromu just answering with exasperated breath. So the crowd's into it. I think it's working from an in-ring perspective. The finish of the match, like what you were saying about the blind tag spot, when Finley got the pin and walked out like right afterwards, it was damn near like a standing ovation for him afterwards. And it just made Finley feel like the biggest star in the world. I mean, the people were going nuts for him. Like, it's clear that the audience loves him. Yeah, he's had a fantastic year so far. At the time when he challenged Goto, I wasn't on the train that Finley should win the title. But looking back, I think there's more of an argument for that now. Just to see, like, the heights that Finley has got to without the title. I think if he sticks around much longer, I think he's definitely due at least a short run. In ring, he's absolutely got everything together. And this year has been like a big watershed moment as far as his character goes. So, yeah, I think it's been a fantastic year for Finlay.
100%. And obviously, we can look back at New Japan Cup. And I do think it was probably a mistake for him not to win, even if Goto was so popular. But despite that, in everything he does this year, whether it's this tag team, obviously he was excellent in the G1. He had that late surge, the great match with Yuya, where he almost made the final, but lost to Takeshita in Korakuen. But he's just come up second fiddle quite a bit this year. And with the report that came out today that most of the War Dogs contracts are going to be up in April, May next year, obviously, there's a bit of chat about Clark Connors at the moment where he might be done based on some of his post-match comments. They're a bit hinting at the fact he might be leaving. But for me, I think for New Japan to truly thrive in 2026, they have to keep Finley. He's so charismatic, which is not something he was a couple years ago. He's so like mature in his role. He's really funny. He's got a lot of charisma. And the crowd just eat it up. They were so reactive to him at the end. And tagging with Hiromu helps, but it just feels like a tag team between two very popular wrestlers, which it's nice to see the crowd really appreciate him after everything he's done this year. And yeah, I hope he gets a spot at Wrestle Kingdom, whether that's in the tag title match or a singles match, because he does deserve it broadly. He's had a really good year, and I thought this was a really good main event. I do agree the Hiromu Finley stick. I do hope it evolves a little bit. I really like it. I think it's charming and different and fresh, and I do want to see how far they can take it. But yeah, we can think of different things to do than just throw Hiromu at people, if you know what I mean. So yeah. But good main event, good second show. And we'll jump straight over to New Japan World Tag League Night 3 in Matsuda City, Monday the 24th, attendance 1,195. Undercard very quickly, Callum Newman pins Zane Jay in the opener. Tanahashi got a win over Gedo. Kanemaru then beat Daiki Nagai in the third match. And in the fourth match, Hartley Jackson back on the tour pins Kato in the preview for the Night 4 main event between TMDK and Shota and Yuya. But on the A block, we have our first block match of the night. It was Bishamon defeating Chase Owens and Yujiro Takahashi in 10 minutes 29 with the Shoto. And we've already spoke about this match today. I genuinely cannot think of anything to say. It was okay. It was fine. It was maybe not even fine. It was a little bit less than fine. Nothing to say.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Are you familiar with the best match of Chase Owens' career?
See, this could be all sorts of things. Is it... It's not the Tanahashi G1 match, is it? Is it the Yano Dome one with the scissor murder? I quite liked that.
No, it's not. It's if you want to look it up after this, I encourage anyone that feels extremely negative on Chase Owens to go check this match out, because I actually just rewatched it the other day. It's on YouTube, and the channel name for who uploaded it is Tony Givens, but it's a match from 2011. It is NWA Smoky Mountain. And it is a main event match between Davey Richards and Chase Owens for the Ring of Honor World title. It is a fascinating little time capsule of a match. It's more interesting than the tag match that we're talking about now, so that's why I wanted to just plug this one. But it's like a 4.5-star match. Chase Owens is like a young babyface facing Davey Richards, who's coming in as like the dominant Ring of Honor World champion at the time. And the atmosphere in that building is incredible. There's only like a couple hundred people there, but they are rooting for Chase in the same way that like a local sports fan would be rooting for like their high school team. And they are just living and dying with everything that those guys do. And the commentators are putting the match over. It's such a big occasion that the commentators actually are kind of getting nervous, it sounds like. But it's so interesting to watch, because they're just living and dying with Chase Owens on like every forearm that he throws, and every time that Davey Richards kicks him, like the commentators are just in shambles because they want their man to win so much. So yeah, it's a fantastic match. It's around 30 minutes or so, but yeah, I definitely recommend anyone check that out and see the potential of what Chase Owens had back in the day. And not to say that he's not good now, but I think he deserves a lot more love for a match that was really good that gets overlooked a lot.
Are we both okay to just not mention this match then at all? Do we nothing else to add?
Yeah, no, we're good.
Yep, great, love it. Yep, it's the most World Tag League match you can possibly imagine. Just, yeah, nothing to say. But sixth match, again, not a match I have a huge amount to say about, actually. Yano and Oleg defeated Kojima and Taichi in 11 minutes 01 with Oleg pinning Kojima with the kamikaze. Do you have anything to say about this one?
No, other than Kojima's just looking a little bit older these days.
Yeah. It's starting to catch up with him now. You know, Nagata had that maybe last year. I started to notice it because I think the two of them have like been in better condition than a lot of their contemporaries. And obviously, Kojima had the big Noah run, beat Shiozaki a couple years back. But yeah, he's not looking his best. Yeah, and there's a reason he's in MLW so much at the moment. But this was a Yano World Tag League match, and I've watched a lot of them over the years, and I usually don't have a lot to say about them. So yeah, that was pretty much it. Seventh match, though, we had Shuji Ishikawa and El Desperado defeating the team of Driller Maloney and Shingo Takagi, with Shuji Ishikawa getting the win in his hometown against Driller Maloney in 40 minutes 52 with the Giant Slam. I actually thought this one was really good. I thought this was really solid. Again, the Driller Shingo team is growing on me. They're getting more chemistry. I like their dual chanting. They do the Shingo chant together, the banging the drums, pointing at the camera, that thing. That's nice. Obviously, the commentary was selling the fact that Driller and Shuji in the past, Shingo and Shuji, had a Champions League Carnival, I think, semi-final a couple years back. So they've got some history between them. They were really going at it. You could tell they had some past chemistry. Despy, again, barely did very little in this match, I noticed. He is struggling. Funny little point from me. Driller and Despy were both juniors about 18 months ago. They could not be more opposed in terms of body mass and muscle size. They're just completely different. It's crazy Driller was ever a junior. It's crazy lying on that scale. I'll just say that. Again, a lot of this was Ishikawa trying to do the giant driver, Driller trying to do the Driller killer. So that it was just dual attempting finishers and countering out of them. Driller does hit his gore in the setup for it, but Ishikawa is just too strong. Hits a great Kamigoye, a really strong knee into the finish. So yeah, it was good. Again, Ishikawa is impressing me. He seems up for it, and he's a different kind of wrestler than we usually get in a World Tag League. So I'm quite enjoying his input.
Yeah, his knee strikes are awesome. I love watching him throw those big tree trunks around.
100%. And then main event. I'm gonna get some water. So could you talk about the main event, please? We had Gabe Kidd defeating Don Fale, Gabe Kidd and Yotsuji versus Don Fale and King of Darkness Evil in 30 minutes 58 with the War Blaster. They've got a patented finisher name. It means they're a real tag team now.
Oh man, you picked the best match to hand over the keys to me to talk about. There's not much to say. My main takeaway from the match was Chris Charlton talking about a stinky asshole with Lance Archer. Yeah, I'm not really sure where it came from, because Archer was talking about opinions and stuff, and he's doing like the old gag of like, opinions are like assholes, everybody's got one. And then Chris Charlton was just like, yeah, and mine's really stinky. So yeah, I don't know. It was a fine match. Like, I think Fale maybe looked a little bit better than normal. Yeah, the Gabe Tsuji team, they have a lot of chemistry. I hate the name of their tag team finisher, because I don't feel like everything needs a name to be legitimate. But yeah, they feel like a team that this is like a one-off for them. They're not going to be a regular team going forward, but they work really well together right now. We talked about it earlier. I feel like the Gabe Kidd vibes has been like a bell curve this year, in the sense that we started extremely strong and then we peaked really low, and now we're kind of on the upside again. I feel like most New Japan fans have kind of gone through the seven stages of grief with Gabe, and now we've reached acceptance in knowing that he's probably not going to be here within the next year to 2 years or so. So we're just kind of enjoying him while we've got him. But yeah, I enjoy him and Tsuji as a team together, and, you know, pretty standard fare to cap mm-hmm. off another night of tag league.
Yeah, I mean, Gabe Kidd, fellow man from the Midlands as I am, not too far from me. I really want him to do well. I thought the Wrestle Kingdom performance against Kenny Omega and the new beginning match with Tsuji, just outstanding. He felt like a star. And then for some reason, he's just thrown it all away, it feels like. And it's a shame, because he seems motivated for tag league. He seems like he wants to be here. Him and Tsuji really get on. I really liked the post-match promo together, him mocking Tsuji with the croaky voice, doing the Honma taunts. It was cute, and the crowd really liked it. So clearly they like each other still. It's just there was so much potential with Gabe Kidd to be like a legitimate main eventer for New Japan for several years. And it just feels like that can't happen now, and it's a bit of a shame. One minor thing from me, from my notes, there was a moment in this match where they call back to the Evil versus Tsuji G1 semi-final, where they tease the Fale finish again. The exact same finish. They do the exact same finish. And like, the crowd reaction is so visceral. And I had like war flashbacks to the worst finish to a match I can remember. And I'm being so annoyed after that. So it was nice of them to make a joke out of the terrible booking we had earlier this year. Yeah, it was great to look back on how terrible that was. But yeah, fine main event. House of Torture, as we know, do that kind of match quite often.
Do you watch Marigold by chance?
No, actually, I've watched some of the main events, but I haven't watched it consistently enough. I'm watching a bit more Stardom at the moment.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say, if you're into some bad finishes, like, there's probably three finishes on every Marigold show that are worse than the Fale-Tsuji G1 match, but...
Vintage Rossi Ogawa. I remember making a spreadsheet years back about how often a Stardom match would end in a DQ or a time limit draw, and it was an alarming percentage. He's a funny one, isn't he? But yeah, booking does get worse than that G1 semi-final, but that in particular has stung with me for a while and is the main reason Tsuji has to win at the Dome. Okay, fourth show. B Block, Night 4 in Fukushima, attendance 699. We had opening match. Have I got the right show? Yeah. Opening match, Tsuji pinning Kanemaru. In the second match, we had El Desperado pinning Yasuda. In the third match, we have Don Farley pinning Daiki Nagai. In the fourth match, Bolton Oleg pinning Matsumoto. And then we get to the block matches. First off, Alex Zane and Lance Archer beating the team of losing to the team of Callum Newman, Great O'Khan. Empire getting their first win with Callum Newman pinning Alex Zane in 9 minutes with the double stomp, in particular after a little bit of Jacob Austin Young interference, which was a bit strange for me. He just seems like such a nice little lad, and it's odd for him to be like a cheating heel. He doesn't have the look for it, or like even Empire doesn't really feel like a cheating faction at this point. Maybe it's just because, obviously, the Callum Newman factor, he's being a bit more heelish. But I thought this was pretty good. This was probably Alex Zane's best showing so far, personally. He was really motivated for it. The crowd really reacted to him. He did a tope near the end that got a very big reaction. Archer and O'Khan do a double claw to the outside, so they're both taken out, which is quite cute. And then Zane gets distracted by the ref, and Callum gets... the ref's distracted... Austin distracts Zane, Callum gets the win. I thought this was pretty good. Monster Source aren't as good this year as past years, possibly because maybe Archer isn't as in-ring as maybe he's toned it down a bit over the years, but I still quite like the team.
Yeah, I also feel like it could be something booking-wise where he's just not going all the way because they're being put in like the first block match of the night spot. Where it's like they don't want to burn out the crowd or do too much to take away from the other matches. Because, yeah, I think their ceiling is a lot higher than what they've showcased so far. I really like the Zane and Callum stuff to start off with. It's just two big, muscly guys just flying all over the place. And I've always really liked Alex Zane. I think he's got a tremendous upside, and I'd like to see more of him if we can get him. But yeah, I mean, same notes for me here. I don't want to see Jacob Austin Young as a heel. He's just too nice. Like, that man belongs in Hontai. You know, if United Empire is not long for the world, as long has been theorized, then I'd like to see him, I don't know, team with Yo or something.
Mm-hmm. Then, sixth match, we have Tanahashi and El Fantasmo versus Hiromu versus David Finlay. David Finlay yet again getting the win over ELP with the rolling cradle. So a similar finish to their first match. Talk us through this one, please.
So I just wrote down the essence of everyone was in this match. I feel like everyone got a chance to shine. It was Tanahashi playing the hits. I liked when he and ELP went up to the middle rope and they both missed the front flip senton, which Charlton keeps putting it over. And I think it's interesting because, like, Charlton is, like, trying to say, oh, yeah, this move shoot hurts. Like, he's crushing people now with it instead of, like, working the move because he's old and he doesn't want to take the bump. But he can't say that. So he's just is like, oh, yeah, Tanahashi's just crushing people these days. But yeah, ELP worked hard. The moonsault to the outside from the top was really nice. Once again, I think it's a case of like ELP is really good in ring. It's just character wise, yeah, he doesn't bring anything to the table. But when he works with Tanahashi, like it seems like he's having a good time. So yeah, just another solid showing. I wish they'd get away from Hiromu and Finlay doing so much of throwing each other on to their opponents. Because there's a lot of that in Tag League too, because like 90% of Monster Sauce's offense is Archer throwing around Zane as well. So like to see that be shaken up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought this one was solid. Again, ELP and Finley had that rivalry when ELP got kicked out of the Bullet Club a couple years back, and they have pretty good chemistry together. That was the broad focus of the finish of this match, their kind of cradle sequence, that the rolling cradle bit where they're kind of like swapping near falls, which I quite like, actually. Probably most interesting thing in this match overall was the Hiromu Tanahashi little sequence, because Hiromu just got really angry at Tanahashi. Like, he started chopping him very hard, put him in the corner. When Tanahashi was down, he started screaming at him about Okada. And he started screaming about Okada and Tanahashi needing to be better, needing to show up. And in the post-match comments, Hiromu said about Tanahashi, kind of building on what happened in the match where they had that little sequence. He said, "Tanahashi, retirement talk, more than all that retirement talk, don't forget it's versus AEW. For the sake of the future of New Japan Pro Wrestling, including us, we can't have you losing to Kazuchika Okada. You absolutely have to win." So, again, maybe a teaser Hiromu Tanahashi singles match. We have, obviously, those Korakuens before, the Rotu Korakuen before the Dome. But also, I don't know about you, it does seem like another tease that realistically, Tanahashi can't lose the Wrestle Kingdom main event to Okada, can he? He has to win, surely. It's just, it feels too negative to have Okada go to AEW, come back, beat Tanahashi, retire him, then just wander off again.
I don't know. This might be the love letter to Okada to come home once the contract's up. You know, sort of one last, you know, hey, you went to America, you made your money, now come back and have, you know, one last run with us. So I don't know. I want to believe that Tanahashi can win, but I just refuse to buy into it until he hits the high five fly flow. I'll buy it then.
Yeah. Again, I think we spoke about this first time, but if you were to choose, what do you think is, like, what would you prefer? Would you prefer Okada beating Tanahashi, but Tsuji beats Takeshita? Or Tanahashi getting the win over Okada, but Takeshita retains the title? What do you think? Would you prefer, what do you think is the better option at Wrestle Kingdom?
I think the really unfortunate thing about New Japan is I'm really into the meta booking of this. Of logic would indicate that Tsuji's going to win and Okada's going to win. But the worst case scenario is Okada wins and Takeshita wins. And New Japan's recent track record of booking shows you that there's a non-zero chance that the worst case scenario will happen. So I'm more invested from a business standpoint of, like, are they going to do the worst case scenario, as opposed to being invested in the story that they're telling. If you put a gun to my head, I would choose Tsuji winning and Okada winning over Tanahashi winning in the main event, because I can grieve and mourn and move on from Tanahashi losing his last match. But Tsuji losing to Takeshita, I think, does almost irreparable damage to Tsuji at this point. Like, it's been, in 2026, it'll be 3 years since he came back from excursion. And that's a long time to not be at the top. And I think that would just kind of be an indication that they don't see him at that level if he doesn't get there really soon.
I still can't believe he didn't win the G1. I'm just like, what? It was such a layup. It felt so obvious. Takeshita hasn't really gained anything from winning the G1 either, personally, besides name-dropping it in the feud with Okada and AEW, obviously for the Continental Classic, kind of building that. But for us, it's just, if you're not going to give it to Tsuji now, it's just never going to happen. And if it does eventually happen, it's not going to be when he's at his peak popularity, when he's got the most marketability on the biggest Wrestle Kingdom ever, 55, maybe 1,000 people there for the retirement of your greatest ever modern star. And you have your biggest young star losing to a guy who works like two matches a month in the company. It's just, it's inconceivable to me, which is why deep down in my heart, I'm kind of thinking that Takeshita might win, just because they've done it so many times with Tsuji over the course of the last couple of years. It's just he has to win, surely. Okay, seventh match, another pretty interesting one actually. The Knockout Brothers lost again, two in a row, to Narita and Sanada, with Ren pinning Asta with the Hell's Guillotine after every piece of interference possible, like guitars, whiskey, you had the push-up bar, everything possible. So, yeah, what do you think of this one?
I thought it was two-thirds of a really average match and then one-third of a fantastic match. I think Yuto Ice going forward has secured his spot for the next 10 years or so in the way that he's worked with the young guys, quote unquote, the young guys, the guys that have been back from excursion for around, 5 years or so. Because I think he's given the best match to every one of them, except for Tsuji. He hasn't had a match with Tsuji yet, but I think when he does, it's probably going to be one of Tsuji's best matches. But he gave the best showing to Narita that we've seen so far in years for him. I liked the character work from Narita, of the symbolic of him throwing down the push-up bar to just go smack the shit out of Ice, and them just trading blows back and forth. It was awesome. And then I really liked the touch at the end where Narita goes for the low blow. It's almost like he stepped in and like feigned a strike and then went for the low blow. And so it kind of shows you a wrinkle in his character of like, yeah, I can still do this. I can still wrestle. I can still be the person that you want me to be, but I'm choosing not to because fuck you, I'm evil. And I think that's better than if he was just playing it straight the whole time, like somebody like Sho, who just shows, he's a one-dimensional character. So I like the little wrinkle that Narita had in this. I thought it was an awesome match. I still despise the push-up bar as a weapon, though.
Yeah, I'd say it was mostly average. And then the Ren Narita Yuto stuff was just exceptional. And the more this, again, takes me back to the Korakuen match with Yuya. Obviously, the Tanahashi singles match recently. Yuto just is not missing whatsoever. He just seems to, with everyone he wrestles, he brings out their best traits. He's got such a well-rounded character. He's got like such a brash exterior, but he's also like really like charismatic, and the crowd seem to be connecting with him quite a bit now. And I don't think he's lapped Oscar. I think they've both been really good returns from excursion, but with Oscar, he's just been good with moments of like really good, obviously in the tag title matches recently with Yuya and Shota. But Yuto just feels like, and I didn't expect this from him when he was a young lion, he feels like he could be a massive star, and I'm quite excited to see how he develops going further. And Narita, I mean, I didn't, obviously he had the Zack match in the G1, which was exceptional, but it does feel like often with Narita, he'll have like a little moment and then he'll fade into the background, doesn't feel like an important player. So it was nice for him to get a win where he wasn't just a cheating heel, maniacally laughing and using a bunch of cheating, which he did, but the way he was like, got the Son of Strong Star character back slightly, he did like the Shibata, slaps into the corner, and then he did the Kenta like overhead like slap to the face he does occasionally. I thought he just seems more motivated to be wrestling Yuto, and hopefully that's a sign. If this is a match they run back, either in a multi-way at Wrestle Kingdom or maybe Ren and Sanada challenge next year, I'd like to see Narita and Yuto go out again, because I thought there was some really good stuff there. And yeah. And from here, you'd expect Knockout Brothers to go on a run, probably. I don't think they'll lose many more matches. So, main event, eighth match, TMDK, Zack and Oiwa, Chin and the Mullet defeated the team of Shota Umino and Yuya Uemura in 23 minutes 38. Zack pinning Shota Umino with a sunset flip after a Oiwa Lariat kind of knock Shota off balance. So this it's hard because so much happened in this match. This was genuine match of the year contender. I think we both are in agreement on that point. This was up there possibly as one of the best tag matches of the year, just broadly. This was better than the six-man tag they had at that pay-per-view show back in September with Taichi and all that six-man tag they had with a lot of these guys. I just thought every aspect of this match was so exceptional. Oiwa, he just looked so much more confident with Zach. And now, compared to last year, Yuya and Zach, their grappling game is just exceptional. They just seem so mature, so like entwined with what they want to do. The way Yuya and Oiwa kind of call back to their G1 match with Yuya grabbing his arm and not letting go. And like they did loads of like different reversals that constantly holding the arm. Then Oiwa and like starts clamping on his arm and really gets into like the submission work, which is when I think he's at his best, when he kind of balances kind of the Hoss kind of strongman gimmick with also the technical edge, which is what he gets from Zach. I thought Shota had an absolutely brilliant showing. It's quite funny that Shota and Zach are always exceptional. Like their G1 match was probably the best match in the G1 for me. They had a brilliant tag match the end of last year. They had a good New Japan Cup match a while back. But their Wrestle Kingdom main event just didn't live up. And we can discuss why that is possibly. But Shota was really up for this. He had great work with Oiwa. They seemed to really be excited to wrestle each other. He does that bullying kind of brawling really well at this point. And then the match kind of built up. There was loads of double maneuvers. There was moments where everyone was laid out in the ring. Shota and Yuya did a double dropkick that was then followed by Oiwa and Zach doing a double lariat. It finished nearly with Shota and Zach in the ring. Shota nearly tapped to the heel hook. And Shota made it to the ropes doing some funny faces, but still really good drama. And then obviously for the finish, Oiwa kind of overpowers Yuya on the outside, gets back in the ring. Lariat Shota into a sunset flip that Zach gets the pin from to put them on 4 points at the top of the block. Just as good a tag match as you can really get in a World Tag League with four exceptional wrestlers.
Yeah, the lariat that Oiwa threw to Uemura on the outside where he took him over the guardrail looked brutal. I really like the finish there with Oiwa getting the lariat and then Zach. It's like Zach was going for a roll-up and then he wasn't able to quite get it the way you wanted. So then he turned it into a jackknife and like flipped over him to hook him for the pin. And to me, that just kind of reads as Zach putting over Oiwa's finisher. The same thing that happened in their first block match where Oiwa hit the German and then Zach flipped into the cradle from that. It feels like Zach is trying to put over Oiwa as, you know, Oiwa's hold is the thing that's getting the pin. And Zach is just getting on top and adding like that little cherry on top, you know, tying people up to get the pin on them. So I think Zach is doing everything he can to put over Shota, Oiwa, like everybody in the match. Like Zach, he works extremely hard and he makes himself look good, but he has the best interest of everyone else that he's in the ring with as well, which is just, it's what New Japan needs right now is to work with the young guys. And Zach is the perfect guy to do that because he understands how to make other people look good while still maintaining his credibility.
100%. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I don't think he really gets the appreciation he fully should. I know, obviously, a two-time world champion now. He feels like a main player in this company, hopefully for the next few years at least. But maybe because of the booking in general. But I think in-ring, I can't think of a wrestler that's had a better year than Zack Sabre Jr. In terms of the G1, I thought he had the best G1 of any wrestler. I think this tag team with Oiwa has developed Oiwa so much. He obviously, regardless of the Wrestle Kingdom match, really wants to help Shota and really bring out the best of him and really anger him and bring out more personality, which is great to see. And again, the Goto matches, like the one at the in the non-televised show, the Tanahashi show, I thought was like unbelievable. And it was such a strong performance from Zach in terms of like bullying and like limb control and like working the crowd and upsetting the crowd. And he does that in pretty much every match he has. And still, for me, doesn't quite get the appreciation he probably should get at this point in time.
No, and when it comes out to the conversation of Zach in the Hall of Fame, I think it's like you look at it on paper, and this man is having the best matches in the company that's generally renowned for having the best matches all year outside of, CMLL and Stardom. It's like if that guy, and Zach's been on top for not on top, like as heavyweight champ, but he's been at the top of the card for going on 10 years now. And it's like that level of consistency. I think Zach is undoubtedly a Hall of Famer someday. And I think that's relatively soon. But yeah, I mean, his consistency among like tag matches and all of his big singles, they always deliver. I think David Finlay belongs in the conversation of like best foreigner as well. I mean, obviously, like Finlay's fantastic. And I think at times you can argue that the top of Finlay's outcome is equal to or maybe a little bit above Zach's at times. But the thing about Zach is his, like, he stands out in every match. Like, I think his floor for matches is still like higher than anyone else's in wrestling right now. So it just amazing consistency across years and years.
100%. And we're 4 nights into World Tag League, and we've had one of the best tag matches. Like, I would say maybe top five New Japan match of the year for me. Maybe slightly outside, I think, possibly, but just a really good advertisement for the company and also the tournament itself. So if you're not watching World Tag League, just make sure you do watch that match in particular, because it was exceptional and I think a really good preview for all four people and what they're capable of and what hopefully they can build on going into next year with all of them in pretty prominent card positions, you'd imagine. So that will be the last show we're going to discuss today. Very quickly, I'll go over the standings in the blocks. So at the top of A block, we have Yano and Oleg on 4 points. On 2 points, we have Bishamon, Kojima Gunn, Despy Ishikawa, Tsuji Gabe Kid, Shingo Driller, and Evil Fale. At the bottom of the block, with no points still, is Chase Owens and Yujiro. But Chase Owens did have a very good match in Ring of Honor in 2011. So he's got that at least. It's not all bad for him. And then B block, we have top of the block, we have Zack Onoiwa, Finley Hiromu with 4 points, 2 points for Umino and Uemura, 2 points for Okan Newman and Narita Sanada and Monster Sauce. And then at the bottom, with no points yet, the tag champions, Knockout Brothers and Tanahashi and El Phantasmo. So just rounding off now, what have you thought about the tournament so far overall? And which teams would you like to see possibly, in terms of like match performance, really stand out? But also, who do you want to go all the way and possibly win World Tag League come the end of November?
If I've got to pick four for the finals, I'd say Zack and Oiwa, Hiromu and Finley, Tanahashi and ELP, and I don't know, I'm torn because I want to see Monster Sauce like really put it together and make a run for it. But then, I mean, you can't go wrong with the Knockout Brothers either. So I maybe best case scenario would be like Zack and Oiwa versus Knockout Brothers in the finals. Yeah, I don't know. If it's gonna end up where we're doing, I'd rather not do a multi-man tag for the tag titles at Wrestle Kingdom because I feel like that just devalues World Tag League a bit. So in some ways I'd like to see Knockout Brothers just win outright. And if they have to do like a multi-man match at Wrestle Kingdom, then do that with, four of the teams from Tag League and have them, do it as a number one contenders thing. But if we've got to pick like an outright winner to do like a singles match or like a, 2v2 tag, I'd like to see Zack and Oiwa. But I mean, I think there's also potential to see this be Zack's white whale of something that he's chasing for a long time. Because he mentioned that in his backstage promo about how he's done everything and he's won every tournament except for World Tag League. So in some ways, yeah, I'd like to see Zack and Oiwa make it to the finals and maybe not win. So you can draw it out and, get another year of the team.
Also, on a purely selfish booking point, imagine if the final was, or even the semi-final, it was Zack and Oiwa, and then the person trying to stop Zack from finally winning World Tag League was Taichi and Kojima, because he had 5 World Tag Leagues as Dangerous Techers. They were the best team in the tournament for pretty much all those tournaments. Never made it out the block, but it would be exceptional if that could happen.
Yeah, seeing Kojima and Oiwa trade lariats would be fun.
Yeah. So, World Tag League, I think we've sold it incredibly well. It's just been exceptional. It's been a really good start to a tournament. I've been not pleasantly surprised because I think looking at the lineups, you expected it to be a bit better than usual. But there is more storyline gravitas to jump onto at the moment. And it feels like a better setup for Wrestle Kingdom than usual. Maybe because, obviously, there's less matches already announced. They've got more things to build up. But it does feel like there's more going on at the moment. And it's reflective in the tournament, how exciting it's been. So hopefully it keeps going and it keeps being as good as it's been so far and improving. And there's more matches to talk about like that last one. So before we round off, I'm just going to ask very quickly, any plugs, anywhere people can find you, anything you want to shout out at the moment?
Not specifically. Mainly I'm just on Facebook, and I'm not even on Facebook all that often, but you can find me at John Bivens if you want to book me for your wrestling show. That'd be fun. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Brilliant. And for me, Mikey8422 on Twitter. I don't really use that account anymore. But yeah, you can follow it, I guess. I'm in the Discord. I'm a moderator at the JCast Discord. If you want to join that, I'll be there. We can chat about all sorts, if it be gambling, pro wrestling, or football. Who knows? There's all things we can chat about. And then, yeah, I'm not sure who will be the host next week. I believe it's another World Tag League kind of like collaborative effort. But have a great week, everyone, and take care.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.